Last time we studied the sin of the Amorites and what that meant. We found out that the Amorite was a word that means any illegal occupier of the land, or any aspect or lease or contract would be Amoritish. You understand? If I illegally held a piece of land and then I got off the land, but I'd made a contract with somebody to farm out part of it, then still the fact that I'd made a contract over there would still make it Amoritish. Do you understand what that means?
Yeah.
Okay. Christ was crucified on the Jubilee year in which the land, all of the land, went back to its rightful owner. Christ has claimed you as his land. He's claimed this vessel, your vessel, as his land. There is no part of the inheritance legally under the law that goes to you. It all must be returned to him. Now, if you have made any contracts, you could say all day that, Father, I'm yours without condition. But the fact remains that you have an infinite number of contracts that make that declaration a lie, then, again, he's not going to violate that will. He can't violate it. Am I communicating? So...
That's pretty weird.
What?
Just that concept. I mean, you deceive yourself. You think, you know, Father, I'm yours, when there's this other agenda just kind of running around and wreaking havoc.
Wreaking havoc.
Yeah, but that's not too confused with free will, though.
There's no such thing as.
Well, maybe I don't understand what free will, you know, has been taught to me.
How could you be free if you didn't deserve it?
Free will means that it's a belief system that you have the capacity to choose. In other words, that there isn't a determined will of God, that there is a permissive will of God. And you have a capacity to choose this and that and this and that. And you have a capacity to choose Jesus Christ as your personal Savior, or this religion or that religion or this or that.
Either choose the fact that he exists or choose the fact that he doesn't exist.
Well, I mean, that's like saying, I'm going to choose not to believe in gravity. I choose to fly. I choose. I mean, it's just ludicrous.
He's in a position to be
Go to Matthew 23. Verse 32. This is where we stopped last time we met. Fill you up then the measure of your fathers. And it's again, we got to recognize that that's a direct reference to filling up the measure, to fill up the sin of the Amorites, to complete it. To complete the sin of the Amorites within you means to know that there is no contract left within your system with another party, that there is no hope of redemption within you. There is no string that's left as a thing that's going to give you life. No plans, no boyfriends, no girlfriends, no husbands, no wives. No money, no ambitions, no dreams. That you have no contracts. And remember, you're spiritual. You're a spiritual being. If you think it, you've made the contract. It's as if you've done it. You understand that? And therefore, you not only have to go through and see the vanity of all the things that you do in the flesh, you have to see the vanity of all the things that you've done and you do in the thought process. Now, because if you don't, then you can't fulfill or fill up the measure of your fathers. You can't, the iniquity of the Amorite won't be full because you found life in the thought process. And so then the whole damn thing has to be delayed until you see that the thought that you had and the infinite number of thoughts that you had are only vanity also. That's why I come down so hard on Harry for his little dreams and little visions about paradise in Seattle or Atlanta or wherever it happens to be this week? Huh? Atlanta. Oh, that's where his other
Barbara,
significant other Barbara was.
His second ex-wife used to live in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And then it was.
I wanted to go to Atlanta. Then I wanted to go to Miami. Then I wanted to go to LA. Then I wanted to go to Miami. Then I wanted to go to Seattle. Then I wanted to go back to.
I don't want
to
keep up with this.
Yeah. No, no. But the point of it is, do you understand me that when you understand that you have to fill up the sin of the Amorite, the iniquity of the Amorite, it means, and fill up the measure of your fathers, it has to be done. I mean, you can't have any life left here in the thought. You can't. There can't be anywhere where you think you're going to have life. I don't think I can ever communicate this to you, because I say this over and over and over for years, and 5 minutes later you come up with a plan that's going to give you some life. Or a place, or a, oh, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do that. Do you understand really what I'm saying? If you believe, if you have pleasure in or think in a thought, and you stop the thought process at the point where there is pleasure, then that thought becomes an impediment for you to see God, because this, you haven't fulfilled or filled up the sin or the iniquity of the Amorite. There is an illegal occupier on this land that is preventing you from seeing life and truth. Well, you stop it, you stop. The fantasy always stops at a point where there's pleasure, if you go through the thought process. Do you really understand this?
Is this of your father's the same as being fed up with youthful lusts?
Yeah, same thing. The word abstain from youthful lusts in the New Testament, lust isn't sexual. Lust, it simply means wanting more than you have. Philip, abstain from youthful lust. It's a terrible translation. The word means be fed up with youthful lust. It means, and the same thing as with the afkumen, when we take the bread and the wine, by law, you cannot take the bread and the wine if you're not fed up, if you're not fed up with everything else. That's why, if you're taking the bread and the wine without being fed up, then you're taking the bread and the wine unworthily. And what God's only choice is to cause your own worst fears to come upon you. Am I communicating at all?
Mm-hmm. So if you have this fantasy and it's, that you're able to bring, it's brought captive and you recognize it, then you take it rather than replay it, stop it, replay it in the pleasure zone. You take it all the way to
right.
It's done to all your whole life.
Let's pick. Amen. Let's pick on one in particular, and since he happens to be to my left, so be it.
Gary.
Poor Harry.
Harry, for years and years, lived in this idiotic fantasy of this second ex-wife who dumped him. She's a reasonably looking girl, reasonably good-looking woman that had reasonable intelligence, but she's a Gentile. And so he dumped her. She dumped him, excuse me. And so he spends 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years moon-faced. Oh, if only. 7 years.
My pattern appears to be 7 years.
Seven.
It's like penance or some kind of
then
weird
shit.
Okay, then at the end of 7 years, he finds a new significant other. This is a blonde Norwegian from Seattle, which he stole from Rick.
She's a Norwegian.
Anyway, so now Harry spends. Now he's got a new. He's got a new Amorite, right? Rather than getting rid of the Amorites, he invents a new one.
Amorite.
She shoots.
She scores.
Amorite. So, but he doesn't understand that she's really getting old, right?
She is old.
Her skin is starting to wrinkle. Her butt is hanging down to South America. Her calves are falling down. Her hair is falling out. Her eyes are getting blue gray.
Her boobs are real sick.
Her boobs, she's
Oli, you dated her too?
I know the girl. Sorry, I couldn't understand.
But in his mind, she is, you know.
A Playboy magazine.
Right.
A gem.
I know, it's shocking one day because there's a lady that was on TV, and here he goes, she looks just like that. And then when he showed me a picture of her, I couldn't believe it. She didn't look nothing like that.
Oh, no, it's a fantasy. It's this selective, it's this filter screen that he passes things through. And besides that, I mean, I know this woman. I wish he'd just go to Seattle. Get over it. But I mean, my point is, as long as that land is there. In other words, as long as you've given the Amorite that land, then all the other land goes back to the enemy too. In other words, there's absolutely no progress. None. Zero. It's as though you never heard. That doesn't seem fair. Well, that's the way it is. Now, every one of you are in the same damn position about something. And it's just crazy. I mean, let's just turn off the recorder, shut down the lights, close it up. You go do the things you think you want to do. And if you want to, then if you find, let's go. Do you understand? If you're going to live in this fantasy island BS, it's just ridiculous. I'm wasting my time. Oh, well, you just don't understand, Oli. Yes, I do. But my plan is really important. No, it isn't. Fill ye the measure of your fathers. Yeah, if you think that there's something important, you know, I can remember in her own inimitable style. What about dignity?
What about romance?
And romance.
I can't believe it! I don't know if I ever thought I'd see the day when you'd be doing that lead.
I'd forgotten about that.
Lee went through her whole...
No, Oli will never let me forget about that.
It's like my sauerbraten gravy.
Yeah. Or romance or casserole.
Every year he'll bring it up.
You know, everybody's got their corn casserole.
It's almost like
the thing that will never go away.
It's like the turkey.
It's like when I hit the. I'm not even sure that ever happened. I think it's just a made up.
It is. It's ponderable.
It's what?
It's one of those things where you just say it and it becomes reality. What do you call that?
A lie?
We have a lie.
That's the word I'm saying.
That was good.
But don't you see, the world is made up, especially today. I mean, it's getting so unbelievable. They have half-hour, they call them program-length commercials, that are made up, and they're designed to cause you not to fulfill the measure of your father. They're designed to give you more space, more Amorite-ish bullshit. I mean, that's all there is. Then there's there are these program length commercials to give you more Amorite-ish stuff. There's more and more things that there's now they're doing in the name of God. I mean, there's all these stuff that how to do something, how to get something in the name of God. Well, that's putting the name of God on Amorite. I mean, that's all it is. That's all life is. But we as a people can't, I mean, we got to forget that. If you can produce anything that is worthy of giving any importance to, talk to me. Don't just let it sit there and fester in your mind. Let's talk about it. produce your strong cause, saith the Lord. I mean, you know, I get tired of busting you. I get tired of being the joker in your temple. Nobody wants to produce their strong cause?
I remember
seeing physically, clearly, and it was so scary. I was so scared. I mean, it was like I was making love to my mother. And it was so, I mean, it was unbelievable.
What were you saying?
And I changed what I saw. It was like a flash, and it was too much, and I changed it.
Well, I beg you.
Created something else to look at or something.
Don't think of this lightly. This is all that we're about. Let not, I mean, that's why it says, cast down imaginations and every high place that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bring into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how it answers Tylene's question about what about the lies that keep coming up. It's like, never says the thoughts go away, but they're in obedience. They're held captive. They're under tight reign of the knowledge of Christ. I mean,
you see it as vanity. You've seen it vanity. If you've seen something as fruit, and vanity isn't what we, you know, don't think vanity is, oh, I'm looking in the mirror. Vanity means futile, without purpose, without value. Now, you have to see that all of those things, in order for the sin of the Amorite to be, the iniquity of the Amorite to be fulfilled, or for you to fill up the measure of your father, you have to see the vanity or the futility, the emptiness of all of those thought processes. Then once you've done that, then your obedience has been fulfilled. Do you understand? Then there's an instant readiness to revenge the disobedience in your mind, because you've already seen, you've already been, I don't have to go down that road. I don't have to learn to play jacks again, or I don't have to learn to, you know, even go hunting, or I don't have to learn to debate somebody, or, I mean, those are all childish things. I don't have to worry about whether or not I believe or not. I don't have to worry about whether I'm saved or not. I don't have to worry about whether or not I have a destiny or a career. I mean, all those are, to me, I mean, they're childish, and they are to you too. They're childish things. When I was a child, I thought as a child. I spoke as a child. When I became a man, I put away the childish things. Well, the childish things, another word for them, I divorced the childish things. The childish things are all of these things that you do not yet see are futile. So that's the arena. What is it that you do not think is futile? That's where we need to look. Because if you have an arena of your life that you do not think is futile, or you have an arena of your thought processes that you think has merit, then everything that being here is a waste of time. Time would be, you can't redeem the time. That you would redeem the time quicker and better by being either hot or cold and going out after that thing that you think you want. Yeah. Lukewarmness is always a synonym for cowardice.
It's one of the things that you said at a breakfast meeting, I guess it was about a week ago, is just like, you know, like sometimes something becomes a phylactery because it just so totally nails you. So when you were talking about my talk, you said fantasy is cowardice, and it was just like, I mean, it's just, you know, and I started to like drift off into like, it's like fantasy is cowardice. Oh, why?
What's
say goodbye thought. I don't want this. But I mean, it just so totally slayed me what that mind talk is. That particularly fantasy mind talk is just...
It's just silly.
It's just something that... It's so easy to flush when you see it instantly as cowardice.
Okay. Well, can everybody understand a little bit the sin of the Amorites? You understand why it must be fulfilled? Okay, let's go back to Genesis 15. Yep. Huh? Genesis 15, verse 15. He's talking to Abram, and he said, "And thou shalt go to thy fathers in peace. Thou shalt be buried in a good old age, but in the fourth generation they shall come here again, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full." Now, where were they? Where's here again? He's in the promise.
Yeah.
In other words, Abram he's now in the promise, and he's projecting that Israel as a people are going to be gone for four generations because the sin of the Amorite is not yet full. Well, that's what happens in us. It's like the seed of Christ in us, our true identity, never leaves. Was born in the Holy Land. Was born in the promise. We have to go down to Egypt. And we have to mess around in Egypt and find all kinds of stuff. And then the plagues get us, and then we go back, and then finally when the sin of the Amorite is fulfilled, we return to Egypt. I mean, we return to the promise. And so the Spirit of God in us witnesses with the Spirit that's in time and space, and there's the witness, and that's what you know. That's what you feel it. You know it. But it can't happen. It's like... It must, I tell you over and over, if there is something in your mind, that's what discipleship is. It's the act of seeing the futility of all things. And if something is going on in the name of God that is not teaching you that, then you're being deceived. And the nations are being deceived. That's what this book is about, the sin of the Amorite being, or the iniquity of the Amorite being fulfilled. Everybody understand?
Amen.
And it came to pass that when the sun went down and it was dark, behold, a smoking furnace and a burning lamp that passed between those pieces. And we talked about that. Remember we said that was the same, it was God walking through the covenant. In the same day the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, "Unto thy seed have I given this land from the river of Egypt unto the great river, the river Euphrates, the Kenites, the Kenizzites, the Kadamites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Rephaim, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Girgashites, and the Jebusites." In other words, God said he's given Abram everything that was formerly belonging to those people. Now, all of those people are Amorites and Canaanites. Canaanites just means a merchant. That's the Hebrew word for merchant. Amorite is someone that's illegally in the land. You understand? So in that context, anytime you are still merchandising, you're living in cause and effect. You understand? You're gonna expend this effort to get that. Are you going to expect that effort to give that? Well, that's spiritually a Canaanite, a merchant. And the sin, the merchandising has to be fulfilled or seen as ridiculous, just as the Amorite, the iniquity of the Amorite has to be seen and fulfilled. Now, each of those other are aspects of you. They're aspects of all men, all of those other names, whether it's the Hittites or Kadamites or Kenites. Now, what we're going to find out in all of these wars from now on in Genesis with these folks, we're going to find out what that war means in you.
Yeah.
And, not only that, how that Christ overcame all of those wars, and so you can rest. Now that's the promise. That's the inheritance. Now, to do this, you have to go into, like, you go to Elam. That's the secret high places. You go to, you know, you go to the Rephaim. The Rephaim are the places in you that you think nobody can touch. They're too great. They're the giants that nobody can get to.
Because you're too ashamed? Or
too big. They're too powerful.
They seem too enormous to you.
Too enormous.
God can't do anything with those things.
And never be
Oh,
them.
Okay.
Even if I talked about
it, even if I said something about it, nothing, God's not going to do anything, so I'm not going to say anything. Of course, nobody else has those kind of things.
That's a place where you feel totally
forsaken.
Yeah.
So every one of these are an aspect that's defeated, that's already been defeated. We just have to see it. As we study the process, we remember the Hebrew method of looking at time was every time they read in the scriptures, where it says, the best one to look at is, in the same day the Lord made a covenant, in the same day the Lord is making a covenant with Abram in me. I mean, in other words, it's everything I read here is just before it happens. Do you understand? So the time to the Hebrew language is a moving thing. There's no history in Hebrew. It's impossible for the Hebrew language to have history. Now, it's hard for us to understand that kind of concept because we think only in terms of history and present. It's impossible in the English language to have a present, if you really think about it. There's nothing worthwhile presently. Everything is past or future. In Hebrew, it's impossible to have a history or, and the prophecy is for the next moment. You understand me? All right, Genesis 16. Let's.
Yay!
Cruise.
Torah woman is coming.
Torah woman.
We do that next. Can
we do the Shema?
Yes.
Yeah.
The fans go wild.
Shema lady. Shema lady and Torah woman.
Our favorite Shema.
Okay, the Shema or Shema is the Hebrew word that says hear with understanding. Before the three-year cycle, before the scriptures were read the first time in any given section, they had to read the Shema. And it's Hear, O Israel. But here is the word Shema.
It's supposed to be every week.
Just shut up, Jackie. Just shut up. We're redeeming the time.
She's got a job to do. She's just doing her job.
Oh, I'm just doing mine, too. Well, flush
it. Okay. He just redeeming the time.
Yeah, it hadn't been a week since we studied.
Yeah.
Not spiritually. Did I get by with that one?
If you could only see
the
spirit.
We had the four Bach only, and that was the day
we
could see the spirit. Yeah. We were only at lunchtime in kindergarten.
If you could only see in the spirit, what you're doing,
you're in a potato sack race.
Could you ignore these Gentiles and read the...
Gotta get it all out of your system.
Silence, children.
Do you want me to say the things out in front of it? Yes, no, maybe.
We don't care.
What? Deuteronomy 6:14. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thine heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy might. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine hand, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes. And thou shalt write them upon the post of thy house and on thy gates. 11:13-21. And it shall come to pass, if you shall hearken diligently unto my commandments, which I command you this day, to love the Lord your God, and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul, that I will give you the rain of your land in his due season, the first rain and the latter rain, that thou mayest gather in thy corn and thy wine and thine oil. And I will send grass in thy fields for thy cattle, that thou mayest eat and be full. Take heed to yourselves, that your heart be not deceived, and you turn aside and serve other gods and worship them. And then the Lord's wrath be kindled against you, and he shut up the heaven, that there be no rain, that the land yield not her fruit, unless you perish quickly from off the good land which the Lord giveth you. Therefore shall you lay up these my words in your heart and in your soul, and bind them for a sign upon your hand, that they may be as frontlets between your eyes. Then you shall teach them your children, speaking of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt write them upon the doorposts of thine house and upon thy gates, that your days may be multiplied in the days of your children in the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers to give them, as the days of heaven upon the earth. Numbers 15:37-41. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, and bid them that they make them fringes in the borders of their garments throughout their generations, and that they put upon the fringe of the borders a ribbon of blue, and it shall be unto you for a fringe, that you may look upon it and remember all the commandments of the Lord and do them, and that you seek not after your own heart and your own eyes, after which you used to go a whoring, that you may remember and do all my commandments and be holy unto your God. I am the Lord your God, which brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. I am the Lord your God.
Oh, what does he mean when he says the first rain and the latter rain?
The first rain, the word for first rain also means teacher of righteousness. It's the word where we get the word, it's yare, which the same, it's the root for Torah. But it also, so it means that the first rain is the teacher of righteousness, or the seed is coming out. That's what we believe it means, the first rain was happening at Pentecost when the seed of the teacher of righteousness was shed on all flesh. The latter rain, it's a weird word, and it means the clarity of a perfectly cast bell. It means the perfect pitch, the perfect sound, the perfect, spiritually it means when you have complete and perfect understanding. But in both cases, it's if you understood all mystery as clearly as if it were a perfectly cast bell and you heard it. Well, it's he shall do both of those. That's the point. He shall give you the early rain and the latter rain in his due season.
I mean, it's like, you know, the rain part, when they plant crops in the field, you know, the first rain would be the one that would be absolutely necessary to, you know, to start the process.
Make it soft enough so that the seed would be planted.
You know, and then the plant would come, and then the latter rain would be the perfection of the harvest. And, you know, you'd have the plant, you'd have the fruit, the latter rain would be what would make it absolutely full, and, you know, like for the grape harvest would be make it absolutely perfect.
Okay, Jackie, would you read the first 8 verses and Crystal the second 8?
Now Sarai, Abram's wife, bare him no children, and she had a handmaid, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar.
Now, remember, this Hagar wasn't just a handmaid. She was a gift from Pharaoh, and she was Pharaoh's daughter. And it was done so that, in an attempt by Pharaoh, in order to have an alliance with this one who we thought would be the great leader, the great king. And so, you got to hear this. This is a big deal.
She wasn't chopped liver.
She wasn't chopped liver.
And Sarai said unto Abram, Behold, now the Lord hath restrained me from bearing. I pray thee, go in unto my maid. It may be that I may obtain children by her. And Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarai.
Now, again, that was perfectly legal under the laws of the time, that the handmaid could bear children, and they would become legal children of the woman of the house, and bear all rights and privileges of that name.
And Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan, and gave her to her husband Abram to be his wife. And he went in unto Hagar, and she conceived, and when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her eyes. And Sarai said unto Abraham, My wrong be upon thee. I have given my maid into thy bosom, and when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between me and thee. And Abram said unto Sarai, Behold, thy maid is in thine hand. Do to her as it pleaseth thee. And when Sarai dealt hardly with her, she fled from her face. And the angel of the Lord found her by a fountain of water in the wilderness, by the fountain in the way to Shur. And he said, Hagar, Sarai's maid, whence camest thou? And whither wilt thou go? And she said, I flee from the face of my mistress Sarai.
And the angel of the Lord said unto her, Return to thy mistress, and submit thyself under her hands. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, I will multiply thy seed exceedingly, and it shall not be, and it shall not be numbered for multitude. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, Behold, thou art with child, and shalt bear a son, and shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord hath heard of thy affliction. And he will be a wild man, his hand will be against every man, and every man's hand against him, and he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. And she called the name of the Lord, and spake unto her, Thou God seest me, for she said, Have I also here looked after him that seeth me? Wherefore the well is called Beer Lahaira? What did I say?
Close enough.
Okay, behold, it is between Kadesh and Bered, and Hagar bare Abram a son, and Abram called his son's name, which Hagar bare, Ishmael. And Abraham was 86 years old when Hagar bare Ishmael to Abram.
Abraham was in a strange land without an heir. Again, you have to see that that was unacceptable in that culture. There was no heir to the promise. He would have died without anything. So he tried to make, remember, first he tried to make Lot, or excuse me, first he tried to make Eliezer the inheritor, then he tried to make Lot the inheritor, now he's going to try to make at least one from his own loins the inheritor. The idea of progressive revelation, the point here is that it hasn't been made clear who's the mother of the promised seed. Now, instead of waiting, Sarah anticipated the Lord. She took things in her own hands. They've been waiting for 10 years. Now, this is a big deal. I mean, this is a big government. I mean, Abram is highly respected. He was given as his wife was given as a handmaid, Pharaoh's daughter. He brought, allegedly, according to the Talmud and other writings, and according to Nicholas of Damascus, he brought the knowledge of mathematics, astronomy, and astrology to Egypt when he came from Babylon, when he came from Ur. When he's considered a great man. Abram is in the writings of all ancient peoples. Now, she followed the custom and sought a son by the daughter of Pharaoh. I mean, that would be a pretty big deal.
She even made him his wife. Isn't that right? Yeah. I mean, no.
She didn't have to make him his wife.
Well, I mean, this is because it says, gave her to her husband Abram to be his wife.
To be hit, yeah, but the word there doesn't mean like what we think of a wife. It means she gave Sarah, I mean Hagar, to Abram so that they could do it. That's
just
what.
Just an ordinary concubine.
The patriarchs all married barren women. Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, the wives of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, all married barren women.
Wow.
Why?
Wasn't it say where does it say she is beautiful?
We're gonna,
and she be happy and
so each one has a picture of the promise. Each
one of the three who are the, when it, remember it talks about over and over and over, 165 times, the faith of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob. The wives of each one of the three had to be a faithful picture. Wow. That we are barren, the bride is barren as far as the world sees and waits for the promise of God. Okay?
Wow.
Now, God uses always barren women to test the faith. And he uses
Hannah.
There's a lot of them. Manoah's wife, Hannah, Michael, Saul's daughter, Elizabeth, the John the Baptist's mother. But we want a religion that has no faith. We want a religion that has no waiting. We want a religion that has no telephone interruption. We want a religion that has, that's clean.
No flies.
Who's the prophet had to go marry that whore? That's Hosea.
Well, Joshua married a whore too, didn't he?
Let me go. This is the third consecration of Abraham. Well, it's really more. There's seven consecrations, seven things, seven give ups, if you will, that happened in Abraham, who's called the perfect believer, the perfect Christian. The first thing that happened was he left his land. He left and all of that entails. The second thing was he left his family. The third was that he followed only God. The fourth was that he separated from Lot, or his possessions. Lot being is a symbolism for the possessions. Then he gave up plans for Ishmael, and Ishmael is the natural you. Next, he had to cast out the bondwoman and her son. Then he had to offer up Isaac. He had to offer up the promise itself.
What was the one before casting?
Give up the plans for Ishmael.
Oh, okay. That was the one.
The natural.
What?
The giving up the plans for Ishmael and casting out the bondwoman. What's
the bondwoman? Let's go to Genesis. Galatians 4, and we'll see. Galatians 4:19. Now, Paul's about to call this whole story that we're reading in Genesis 16 an allegory. Now, if it's an allegory, it doesn't mean it's not true. In other places, Jesus calls it a parable. What are parables? What are allegories? What are metaphors? They're things that say something other than what they look like they say, right? My little children. What? My little children, of whom I travail in birth again until Christ be formed in you. I desire to be present with you now and to change my voice, for I stand in doubt of you. Tell me, you that desire to be under the law, do you not hear the law? For it is written that Abraham had two sons, the one by a bondmaid and the other by a free woman. But he who was of the bondwoman was born after the flesh, but he of the free woman was by promise. Which things are an allegory? For these are the two covenants, the one from Mount Sinai, which gendereth to bondage, which is Hagar. For this Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia, and answereth to Jerusalem, which now is, and is in bondage with her children. But the Jerusalem which is above is free, which is the mother of us all. For it is written, Rejoice, thou barren that bearest not. Break forth and cry, thou that travailest not. For the desolate hath many more children than she which hath a husband. Now we, brethren, as Isaac was, are the children of promise. But as then he that was born after the flesh persecuted him that was born after the spirit, even so it is now. Nevertheless, what saith the Scripture? Cast out the bondwoman and her son. For the son of the bondwoman shall not be heir with the son of the free woman. So then, brethren, we are not children of the bondwoman, but of the free. freer spirit. The only reason that we have, that God has slowed spirit down a little bit. And so he slowed things down a little bit so we have a universe. But we still are spiritual. Spirit beings. The law is spiritual. They that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. They must not literalize the parable or the allegory. Everything that you see is saying something else. If you get by, if you get distracted on the way by literalizing the parable, by thinking something is more important than something else, if you think one thing of the senses is more important than another thing of the senses, you've literalized the parable. And you will always get in trouble. Now, again, I think of the years and years and years of conflict that Ed has had internally over this issue. Because Ed had, it's a humongous struggle for him not to think that certain things are more important than other things. Certain things have more value than other things. I'm here to tell you that that Bible college down the street has no more value than that crack house down the street. They're both equal. They're both simply things that will drive the seed to the point of that the sin of the Amorite would be fulfilled. If you literalize any aspect of the parable, no matter how bad it may seem, no matter how tempting it is to have a cause, then you will be deceived in all arenas. You understand? If you think marriage is anything other than a parable, then you will be deceived in all arenas. And the time that it takes for you to stay in that deception is the time it takes you to see that the iniquity of the Amorite, the futility of it, must be revealed. If you think that having children or the children, or the way children are raised, is any more important than anything else, if you think, you know, if you even here, if you think that us as a community is more important than anything else, if you start taking us seriously, if you think that taking in the homeless is more important, if there's any discrimination among all of the ranges of either good works or bad works, then you're literalizing the parable, and you're not seeing the mystery. There's no such thing as a degree of sin. Sin is missing that which is intended. It doesn't matter if you miss it. If you stand here on earth and you miss the mark, well, a billionth of a millimeter, by the time it gets to the sun, you'll have missed it by millions of miles. Don't literalize anything. Let this, if Paul, the greatest of the expositors, says that this message of the bondwoman or her son was a parable, then don't you literalize it. This is the point where all of the monotheistic religions are at. We've talked about this before so many times, but you know, the Muslims believe that the promises of God went to Abraham, now to Ishmael, through Hagar. The Jews believe the promises of God went to Isaac through Sarah. The Christians believe, who knows what the heck they believe.
They don't even know about it.
But the law says the promises go only to one, the seed. Not of seeds as of many, but to one seed. It's real important. Okay? That's enough for tonight. Well, let's take a break.
No, make that enough.
Huh?
Make that enough.
Take a big guy.
Good night, big guy.